Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. When children love learning, they can tackle any challenge life throws at them. Sylvan's Insight Assessment can help you determine if your child is ready for what's ahead. It can also identify gaps in learning and point out areas that could be of concern for your child so they can tackle what's to come. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
Hi, we're Visible. We're the wireless company with nothing to hide. Seriously. Hidden fees? We don't have them. Annual contracts? Not our thing. Great wireless on just one line? Now that's more like it. Get unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month. Taxes and fees included. That's right, $25 a month, every month. Sorry, hidden fees. We're just not that into you. Sometimes the choice is just Visible. Switch today at Visible.com. Rate with service on the Visible plan. For additional terms and network management practices, see Visible.com.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
All right, everybody, we are live here on the UFC Vegas 61 post-fight show. That card is in the books. Yan Xiaonan picks up the biggest win of her career against Mackenzie Dern in the main event. But I have a feeling there'll be a lot of discussion about that fight, the scoring of the fight, etc. And I'm here with a man who has a lot on his mind right now, a lot going on, including his Georgia Bulldogs apparently playing not like...
It's horrific, Mike. It's so bad. And I'm also supposed to be working this BKFC card, which is horrific in a very different kind of way. And all my technology is failing. I'm having a rough night, bud. Having a rough night. But let's talk about Mackenzie Dern, one of the most interesting fighters in MMA.
So this is an interesting fight. I mean, I don't know if it was a good fight. I don't really know.
It was definitely not that.
it was an
I don't know if there were
fight.
Any good fights on this card, man.
Yeah. There are a couple. But it was an interesting fight. Yan Xiaonan was clearly winning on the feet and anything that didn't involve being in a guard position or being mounted or anything like that. But there are two big rounds for Mackenzie Dern. Round two, round five was huge. She was like this close to getting that arm for an arm bar with like 10 seconds left in the fight. Yan gets free, lands a couple of shots. The horn sounds. Now, MMA Fighting's official score, the stance 47-47, a draw, a 10-8 fifth round for Mackenzie Dern. And for those who follow you on social media, you threw out a different kind of a scorecard. How did you score this fight for those who didn't see it?
I scored it 47-46 Dern. I think, kind of looking back on it, I think I actually should have scored it 46-46 for a draw. I'll rewatch it tomorrow at some point and decide if I change my opinion. But I know I said it on my Twitter when I posted it. I knew I was going to catch heat for it, and that's fine. Like, I gave Dern 2 10-8 rounds. I think what I didn't do and I maybe should have done was I should have given Yan a 10-8 for that third round where she really had Dern on skates with that one big left hook. But because Yan didn't really follow up that shot at all and just stayed to her game plan, I just gave her a 10-9. But I, by the letter of the law, it's fine not to give Dern 10-8s for rounds two and rounds five. I really think that you should give Dern 10-8s for rounds two and five. If MMA scoring is to mean anything, it feels a lot like those rounds deserve 10-8s for me. Just because, and for the people who I'm sure the comments are already going wild about this, the very brief rundown of 10-8s is that if a fighter has damage, duration, and dominance, you have to give one. If they have two of the three, you may give one. Dern very clearly had two of the three in both of those rounds, and I would, by definition, then give her the 10-8s that I think she rightly deserves there. So I don't have an issue with her not winning the fight because holistically it was awful. Like the fight as in totality, really bad. But I did score it for her, and I think that's a defensible scorecard.
Yeah, I don't hate that one. I mean, it's tough to like live blog and then watch.
It's incredibly difficult. It's
very, very difficult. So as I'm trying to multitask and watch the fight and then type without misspelling every word, I scored the second 10-9 for Dern. I have to go back and watch it. The fifth, I definitely scored 10-8 because I actually think she had all three of those D's in the third round. She landed a bunch of punches in that fight.
And she landed some punches in the second too, but yeah, I agree with you.
But a ton more in the fifth. And honestly, if she kept throwing punches in that fifth, she might have got her out of there. But again, Jan was very tricky on the ground. And yeah, it was a fight. And as our good friend Alexander K. Lee likes to say, that was a card.
That was a card. Dern did a lot of things that are awful in that whole fight. And I am loath to critique her work on the ground because she is obviously much better there than I am. But she did fall into the trap that like a lot of high level jiu-jitsu players fall into, which is they value the submission over just beating the shit out of somebody. And like Jan was clearly ready to defend in the ways that it was happening. Like she was doing the thing. She was trying to give up the backpack to the back where Dern can't hit her as effectively where she's on her back and Dern's back is to the mat. And instead, like you said, if she had just stuck with the, all right, I'm going to gift wrap you, flatten you out, and then just punch you in the side of the head 57 times, that's probably a much more effective way to do it. Because to my earlier point on the 10-8 round, she did it in round two as well. She hit her a bunch, and then she would stop and fish her submissions. And my theory on this has always been they're uncomfortable when you're hitting them. When you fish for the submission, that's when they have time to get their wits about them and play defense again. Like, it's very an all or nothing proposition. If you don't get the submission, you haven't affected the fight in a way that you would have if you had just stuck with pop, pop, pop. More specifically, would have loved to see some elbows from Dern. It's not a thing that she ever does. She just went for the hammer fists, which are fine, but like,
yeah.
That sort of dominant position, it doesn't take too many elbows to really make somebody change their whole worldview about what the hell's going on. So, like I said, I scored it for Dern, but if you want to score it for Jan, I understand where you're coming from. I don't agree, but in a big picture, I thought Dern did about 100 things that I was really thought were bad. So I'm okay with punishing somebody for not fighting very well.
What's very strange is that two or three fights prior, and I know Joseph Bosa just put this on, and I'll get to why your hands are in your face in a second, but
all we're doing is field goals, Mike. It's freaking Missouri. If you want to spend an hour talking about the many failings of Kirby Smart and Stetson Bennett the fourth right now, I would love to go into it because we have one really good player and we're just not throwing him the ball. Like I know Brock Bowers is an All-American. F it. Let's throw it to our bad wide receivers. It's killing me, man. It's a bad night.
What I was going to say is that in the Hione Barcelos-Trevin Jones fight, there's a 30-25 scorecard there. Someone gave Hione Barcelos two 10-8 rounds, and there was only one 10-8 in the main event, which I found kind of interesting, considering that 10-8s were kind of just thrown out a little bit more loosely on this card. But Jan Janan gets the majority decision win. She snaps a two-fight skid. She didn't have a call-out. She didn't call for a title shot, which is very smart. It's not the kind of fighter that she is. But AK and I will talk about this a little more tomorrow. But where does she go from here? Like, how big of a win is this for her? Obviously, it's huge because you don't want to lose three in a row in the UFC, especially when you're a top 10 ranked fighter in your division. But what do we do now? Does she get, like, a big step up? Is she in a number one contender fight? Like, or is she just, you know, is this like a turtle race right now?
I mean, I think she's just screwed, right? Because like, I want to make sure I'm not effing this up. No, yeah, this is what's going to have to happen. She's just going to have to fight Jessica Andrade next. And she's going to get killed. Jessica Andrade's going to absolutely obliterate this woman. And so congrats on the win. To be fair, Mackenzie Dern would have been in the exact same boat and she would have also gotten wrecked. But like, that's a tough prize for winning. Arguably the best win of your career is you are the cannon fodder to Jessica Andrade. But you know, Sometimes that's the way the cookie crumbles, I guess.
Now, normally a UFC event, the big talking point is the main event and the stakes involved in the main event. But I actually think we've already discussed the main event about as much of the story we're going to get out of this card,
Tell you one more thing about the main event, Mike.
Go ahead. I would love to
I have a big thought about Mackenzie Dern. I want to talk to Jason Perillo because I have no idea what they're doing. Like, her game doesn't make sense because she has one skill that is better than everybody else in the world. Like, legitimately, in the whole wide world. And her game is not built to maximize this skill. And it's, I think, very highly of Jason Perillo. And so my assumption is that he has tried to do stuff and she just, it just doesn't click for her. But, like, you can see that she is a better striker than when she started. She is still probably the worst striker in the entire UFC. Like, she is just horrible at it. She's really, really bad at it. She has no sense or feel for it. She knows how to throw a punch, one single punch, and then she is willing. She does not get cowed or back off. She will step in and sling. But there is no defensive responsibility at all. She mostly ducks her head in the same fashion coming forward. And that also translates to her wrestling, which isn't wrestling. She just bends over at the waist and closes in, but she doesn't back it up with any footwork or any explosion. So Jan looked like a heroic defensive wrestler because she just pushed and pivoted. Like, it wasn't, she didn't make it hard. And then Dern even in the later rounds where I thought Dern was going to have more success because Jan clearly was tired after the second round of getting her ass beat, like, Dern couldn't corral her. And when she would get in tight to where they could exchange and tie up arms, then Dern would start swinging some punches too. Like, I don't – like, Khabib is the guy that you should take your cues from. You're never going to be Khabib as a wrestler. But the part of Khabib's game, like, Khabib was great because of three things. One, he was the best athlete maybe in the whole sport. Like, he was an unbelievable athlete. Nobody ever talked about it. Two, he had unbelievable wrestling and top control grappling. Like, those are that. And the third thing was that the rest of his game was built to maximize that. And that is what the top fighters do. If they have an A-plus skill, the entire game is built around it. Conor McGregor won two belts with a left hand, and every tool he had was a setup, a different trap, a different way to engage that hand because he knew what he had. And you go to the thing. If you have an A++ skill, if you have a star player, you don't run screen passes for freaking awful players on your football team. You get the ball to Brock Bowers. And, like, Mackenzie Dern's game is not set up to maximize her grappling. It is, if I can get guard pulls or weird tie-ups, like, what the hell are we doing? Give this woman a jab. No other punches. A jab, maybe an uppercut, and teach her how to shoot a takedown. And even against Jan, she didn't need to shoot. All of her success was not coming at shooting at the legs, because Jan was stuffing the head and was clearly prepared for that. All of it came when she was just like, I'm actually also a physical monster, and when I get a real tie-up around your upper body, I could just hoss you down. Like, her game has not been developed to maximize her good skill. And so when she can get her good skill going, it's great. And we saw it tonight. She still had that. But why whatever they are doing is wrong. Like, it is categorically wrong because this woman is never going to be good at striking. She's been doing it for a long time and she can't. And some people just don't adapt to that well. And there's nothing wrong with it. But spend every waking minute of her training life getting to the positions that win you fights. Like, I really have no idea what they're doing because I think Perillo's a great coach and he knows so much more than me, but it feels like they are not seeing the problem here. And that's why we had what happened today. Like, she should be a world champion. She's probably never going to be one, but she should be. There is no reason if you have this level of skill that she should not be able to at least challenge for a world championship belt. And I don't know that she ever will now.
There you go. Still waiting for bonuses. We don't have those yet. By the way, Mike Bell, the only judge to score a 10-8. He scored 10-8 in the fifth. He was the one that scored it a draw, 47-47. He scored it the exact way I scored it.
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. As a parent, you want your child to have every opportunity. But giving them the tools they need to tackle every challenge, that takes a team. Now more than ever, educational support tailored exactly to what your child needs can make all the difference. That's why parents have trusted Sylvan Learning for 45 years as the ultimate teammate in their child's educational journey, instilling in them a love for learning and a passion for reaching the next level. And Sylvan's Insight Assessment can identify gaps in learning and areas that could be of concern for your child. It's a 360-degree view into your child's learning that you can't find anywhere else, and helps ensure that your child didn't miss something in school that might put them at a disadvantage in the future. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
Hi, we're Visible. We're the wireless company with nothing to hide. Seriously. Hidden fees? We don't have them. Annual contracts? Not our thing. Great wireless on just one line? Now that's more like it. Get unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month. Taxes and fees included. That's right, $25 a month, every month. Sorry, hidden fees. We're just not that into you. Sometimes the choice is just Visible. Switch today at Visible.com. Rate with service on the Visible plan. For additional terms and network management practices, see Visible.com.
Sean Alshai is going to be joining us in a moment. I can't wait to get his take on all of this, but the big story was not Mackenzie Dern. The big story was not Yan Xiaonan. Big story was not any of the fighters who competed on the card, Jed. The big story was, why were the fans not allowed in the building? Why were the media not allowed to cover this event inside the UFC Apex? We heard the rumor and innuendo about Mark Zuckerberg. Dana White said it was BS, that he didn't rent it out. And who knows, maybe he didn't rent it out. Maybe he was an invited guest, and the only way that the Zuck man would show up is if it could just be him and his wife and maybe like his security team or whatever. But it was very weird. It made his presence made this a very weird card. It just made it very weird. Every time you looked in his direction and you saw him by himself, and then like the second to last fight, I think Dana started joining him, and you just saw Zuck, and the UFC's just promoting all of this. It was just bizarre, man. What did you think? I know it wasn't a stunning revelation when you saw Zuckerberg in there, but it was just so weird. It just didn't make sense. You know, it was just weird.
I never cared about this aspect of the thing or whatever. It's billionaires do stuff. It remains weird to me. I had thought that maybe they were doing something specific, because why in God's name would you pick this fight card to be the one you buy out? When on paper it looked bad, and in actuality it wasn't very good either. But you know, billionaires are eccentric weirdos, and Mark Zuckerberg certainly one of those. So it influenced me in no way, because it's not like there's a crowd at the Apex that you can hear or care. It's always stupid when a fighter says "make some noise" at the Apex, because there's nobody there anyway. The only part of this that I think about at all is that it's really pretty shitty to not allow the family of the fighters into the arena. Like, that's, I don't care about the fans coming to this Apex card. Zuckerberg did you a favor. He fell on a grenade for you not having to go watch this shit. But I do feel bad that the families of the fighters or whatever, like, couldn't be in the crowd cheering for their sons and daughters and brothers, sisters, etc. So the rest of it is like, whatever. Cool. There's a weirdo by the cage. All right.
There's Shaheen Alshadi joining us live. Sean, we're talking about the presence of the Zuck man. Mark Zuckerberg comes in. And, I mean, talk about the king of impeccable timing. The card is off to a start. We're getting a bunch of first-round finishes. Then we get a second-round finish. And then Zuckerberg's like, you know what? We have to make sure we time this so that we sit down in that front row seat for the fight for the people's main event, Alexei Oleinik versus Aliyah Latifi. And boy, did those two guys deliver for Mark Zuckerberg. But it, like I was saying to Jed, he didn't really care too much about it. But once you saw him there, it was just hard to ignore. And it was like a canker sore. You don't want to play with it. It hurts like hell, but you can't help it. And I just couldn't help seeing Zuckerberg on my screen. And it kind of like, it was just weird. It was just a very strange aspect of the card. What did you think about Zuckerberg's appearance? I know it wasn't a stunning revelation because Dana White said it wasn't true. And then it turned out being true, which isn't shocking at all. But
what?
I know, right? But I
that's
mean,
that's crazy talk. Are you kidding me? That guy lied to us. That's incredible.
What did you think about all of this?
First of all, welcome. Thank you, fellas. I'm glad to be here. Sorry to join a little late. I'm really enjoying this, just watching Jed obviously react to Georgia, like right now, like the Georgia it's football the game that's going on.
It's really, I'm having a bad night, man.
I can tell. I'm sort of living vicariously through you right now, and I'm pulling for you. Talk about the king of bad timing. This is like the last thing I actually wanted to talk about coming into the show. I mean, I don't know, man. The whole thing felt gross. Kind of, right? Like I don't really care about Mark Zuckerberg. The dude has objectively done very harmful things to our society and like is just generally impacting our country in a very negative way. So like this lionization of him and this whole night spent like seeing his face and, oh, look at this, Zuck's just like one of us. He enjoys the fights just like one of us. Like, yeah, that guy's not like one of us at all. And never at any point in his adult life has he been like one of us. Like, I don't
look,
this is
just
all very
because
weird
we
to
care
me.
About democracy doesn't mean Zuck isn't like us. Okay. It's fine. Yeah,
the whole thing felt super gross and kind of, again, just like the image of basically every fighter on the undercard begging for pennies and scraps while, you know, one of the richest men in the world and also other million and billionaires were just sitting in the room basically having their own private fight show like this was a James Bond movie or something was just very hard to sort of get over, I guess. But yeah, I mean, whatever. I've seen Zuck's name too much this week. I've seen Zuck's name face too much tonight. Like, I have no other Zuck opinions.
Okay, fair enough. I mean, I only bring it up because at the end of this card, he's the biggest story coming out of it. I mean, the card wasn't great. It wasn't great. It was a fine start. It didn't end spectacularly. And the biggest storyline of this entire card is
the biggest storyline of this post show is Jed. Jude living and dying on Georgia.
Did Georgia?
You were lucky Jed? I muted my mic there. No, but we finally didn't look like a bad JV high school team on an offensive series.
Whew. I know I come in super late, so I'm sorry to retread, but just going back to the main event, how did you fellas score it? I'm sure you've already talked about this, but I'm just curious. Did you score it a draw, or did you?
I scored it 47-46 Dern. I gave 2-10-8 rounds to her for 2-5. I think upon rewatch, I will probably score it a 46-46 draw and also give Jan a 10-8 round for the third for the time when she almost took Dern's head off.
Yes, my score along with MMA Fighting's official score was 47-47 a draw.
Okay.
What did it say you, like Sean?
That. Yeah, I think I sort of landed in that same place too. Round 5 was weird though, right? Like that's about as close to a borderline between a 10-8 and a 10-9 as it feels like you can get. Because I don't know that McKenzie was ever like in super omnipresent danger of finishing that fight, but just the striking totals and like how dominant what she was for pretty much like 4 minutes of the 5 minute round kind of pushes me towards a 10-8 as well. It felt like this fight ultimately like leaving it, if you're just going pride style, like this feels like a draw. And so I scored a draw too, just ultimately, but you can't hate on it one way or another. I Jed, that's an interesting scorecard. I can't hate on it either. It's one of those weird fights where it feels like any outcome, you can sort of make a good case for it, right? Like you can make a case for Jan winning, obviously. Draw, you can make a very good case for it. And ultimately, like I can't hate on what you're putting out there, Jed.
Yeah, like I said earlier, if you scored it for Jan, I do disagree. I think that you really should. Not giving Dern a 10-8 for either round feels bad to me. But I am also, like I told Mike, in the grand scheme of things, totally okay with Jan winning because Dern mostly fought like an idiot and terribly. And so I don't like rewarding people who fight bad. So I'm like fine with it in that regard.
I will say though, like at this point, it feels like Mackenzie Dern is one of the most frustrating fighters just in general to watch in the UFC and like her general evolution through MMA, because yes. Like I was sort of in the ground floor here in Arizona. Like I went to a lot of her pre-UFC shows and sort of was around when everyone was, you know, propping her up as sort of this next big thing who's going to hit MMA, and obviously justified, right? Like she's one of the greatest female grapplers of all time. The evolution is just not there in a way that's so ridiculously frustrating, because we were talking about this in our private just Slack channel among the team of just like, if you give her, I've been saying this for a couple of years now, and it's not like some crazy take or some, you know, I'm not breaking the atom here, but like if you give her just two go-to takedowns, like even takedowns against the fence, something a la Damian Maya, and you just give her two takedowns that can reliably work, the
pod, I know, right, though?
The pod listeners are gonna have no idea why we keep laughing, but Jed,
it's the best.
If you just give her two takedowns that consistently, not even like all the time will hit, but even like 50% of the time will hit,
well, that would be really high.
That woman is a world champion. Like that woman is a world champion probably pretty quickly. Like it's just so frustrating because she might be the worst wrestler in the entire division. And like her striking hasn't really evolved as well. And it's just like, I don't know. I know that stuff doesn't come easy for some people. Like it may not just be natural for her to be a wrestler, but just there's gotta be ways for her to get the fight on the ground other than pulling guard. Because it feels like that a lot of the time, that's what it sort of ultimately reverts to, is just her having to pull guard to get this where it wants. Because once she's down there, like there is nothing else at 115 more spectacular than watching Mackenzie just drown people, right? Like just that process, I could watch that for 20 minutes straight of someone just desperately getting, like fending this off and getting tortured essentially.
Still no bonuses yet.
I love that Sean agrees with everything I said, by the way. Because yeah, she just needs to stop trying to strike. She clearly can't do it. I'll be back in 3 seconds. I'm going to watch this fourth down play.
I kind of just want to watch him.
What are we doing?
All right, so what happened?
We now have first and goal, but we tried a jet sweep that almost got blown up in the backfield because our wide receivers, again, I can't stress this enough, are bad. And he just refused to get north-south. Fortunately, we got it, and now it's first and goal, and hopefully we won't screw the pooch any harder than we already are, and then we can maybe have a game, but please continue.
All right, we'll talk.
This is fitting for a post show of this type of card, because this was a very bad card.
Yeah,
I'm surprised we're doing the post show now, because like Bellator's happening.
Well, I mean, we're gonna do like a Twitter Spaces thing with Bellator. Oh, okay. We'll
watch along. We'll do
a little watch along. I know from what I understand, Juan Archuleta is whooping on Enrique Barzola right now in the first fight. But Randy Brown gets a win over Francisco Trinaldo. Jed, I want to turn this over to you. We saw Randy Brown just straight grab the fence.
Oh yeah, it was grab heroic. The fence.
And the
always
way,
cheap, yeah, always
and,
cheap.
And why the way not? That and the way that the fight played out, that fence grab could have been the win for Randy Brown. It was gigantic. It was gigantic. And again, so I just do what I always do. I tweet out always cheat.
Oh, you should.
And I had multiple coaches. I had multiple coaches text me right after and he goes, always cheat, right? I said, yep, always cheat, man. Because they're not going to call it. And even Dominic Cruz, John Anik had the call of the year on that. He goes, or you can just pull out your damn testicles and take a point. I'm not saying that a fence grab should be a point, but a fence grab should be, hey, cut the shit down on your back. It's a takedown. We're calling it a takedown. We're stopping the action. We're changing the position. You are on your back. This hulking 43-year-old individual is going to be on top of you, and you're going to have to deal with that. But again, Randy Brown wins. Doesn't matter, because you could cheat all you want. And he now has 4 wins in a row. Were you impressed with Randy Brown, Jed Meshew?
Also, real quick, that's how you know it's egregious. Like, that's how you know it's real egregious when John says something. Because, like, I love John. John's the man. Yeah. He's the best commentator we have. But, like, he normally does not take a side.
He carries a lot of water.
Yeah, he doesn't take a side in like that type of way, and for him to do that immediately, that's when you know something was egregious.
Yeah, it's just crazy. It's just nuts. Like Dominic Cruz was saying already, he goes, hey, goes, just keep cheating because the referees aren't going to do anything. They're not going to call it, so you should just do it. And then John said what he had to say. But with the cheating, Jed, Randy Brown gets the victory. Were you impressed? He's now got 4 wins in a row. Francisco Trinaldo just continues to be a very tough guy to fight.
Look, I don't know how many more times we can say it or any number of times that you can see the benefits of cheating in any athletic competition. It's just out there, especially because one, it's not cheating if you don't get caught. And in MMA, it's just not cheating in general because there's no such thing as getting caught because nothing happens. So why wouldn't you? It's just being savvy is all it is. My main thought about this fight outside of the way to go, Randy Brown, I'm proud of you. You did the right thing. Is man, those two dudes are not in the same weight class. The whole time I was watching, I was like, well, one of these men does not look like the other one. So it's a bit of a shame that it took egregious cheating and a colossal size advantage, but good for you, Randy Brown. 4 in a row. You're like a legitimately interesting guy in this weight division. So, yeah.
Francisco Trinaldo's still out here having competitive fights with like legitimately great, legitimately like good fighters. And Trinaldo's like 44, and he's still like. Dude,
the last week has been phenomenal for your elders. Respect your elders, kid. Guido Cannetti comes out and makes Costa look like an absolute amateur. Everybody's doing great lately.
Well, it wasn't a Linux night though. You can't strangle a man with no neck.
The biggest underdog on the card. Was he really?
No, Don Shane.
I thought Shane was the biggest outside of that.
Yeah, Costa was like a minus 290 or something like that. He was a big favorite. He ruined the Randy parlay. Sean, before we go to the peeps, what's your biggest takeaway from this card? What's when your child, when he's ready to walk and talk and he says, Dad, I want to go back and watch all the great fights of the year I was born. Before I turn on UFC Vegas 61, what should I watch first? What are you going to tell your young child?
I would tell him he should probably find other interests. Don't go back and watch this. That would be very silly. No, I don't know. I mean, the undercard was very fun for the most part. Yeah. Like basically, funny enough, everything until Zuck got there was like pretty entertaining for the most part, right? Like it was regional MMA type of card in which like, you know, very quick finishes and kind of overmatched matchmaking in some regards. So in that type of way, you go to regional card, you see lots of finishes. It's a lot of fun. That was cool. Calm down, Jed. It'll be okay. It'll be okay, man. But ultimately, I think really my biggest takeaway is just, again, the frustration when it comes to Mackenzie Dern's evolution. Because it feels like she is so close to just becoming just this ultra elite strawweight in this division. She's figured out the weight for a long time. The weight was the problem. It's just those takedowns, man. If she could just find one or two, I'm not going to rehash it. But that ultimately is my big takeaway. But also, I got to say, give some credit to Sadiq Youssef out here, who dealt with a very difficult situation. Like, this guy has been grinding for a while trying to get a top-ranked fight. Finally gets something in that regard against Giga, and then that falls out. He ends up having to fight this guy on very short notice, and he treats him like a 10-1 favorite should, or whatever he ended up being, right? Like 30 seconds at this point, 7-1 under the Zuffa sort of umbrella, if you count contender series. And that one is just a loss to Arnold Allen, which you don't take that away from anybody. Like Arnold Allen's one of the best damn fighters in this whole 145 division. I really want like Sadiq Youssef to get this opportunity now to fight a contender, like a real contender, and make his way up the rankings, because he has sort of been stuck in this 12 to 15 range for a long time. I know Giga was going to be that guy. If he can get the Korean Zombie one, anything really, like I believe in Sadiq Youssef. Let me say it that way. Like I feel like there's more there that we're not getting, and he's just sort of grinding away in this bottom zone without getting this opportunity. So ultimately, good on him for getting it done in 30 seconds. Again, treating it like he should have as such a big favorite. But I hope he can get a big fight that's a meaningful fight, because he deserves it.
Yeah, it would be ill if that happened, but I think he's going to get Ilya, and that's going to be a tough night at the office for him probably. But I think that's probably what's going to happen, because Ilya's going to fight October 29th.
Still better than being Jan.
Yeah, that's true. But yeah, good win for Sadiq. He did what he had to do. My biggest takeaway, it was nice to see Mike Davis back in the octagon. This guy has had horrific luck. I mean, just awful luck. And I always reference the interview that never saw the light of day on MMAfighting.com. I interviewed Mike Davis right after the Mason Jones win. And there was just so much happening at the time that it just never got released. But it was the most fascinating interview with Mike Davis you probably ever heard. And him just running through the litany of things he went through just to get to the Mason Jones fight, including getting run over by a car. Yes, he's riding his bike and he got hit by a car, which knocked him out of action for almost another year. And now he's gone. The Mason Jones fight, he was so hurt and so banged up heading into that fight. He probably should have pulled out of it, but just hid all the injuries that he had, fought an absolute insane fight, won it, and then he's been gone for 20 months. He comes back against a pretty tough dude in Slava Klaus, who was a replacement opponent for his original opponent. Great. And he went out there and wrestled his ass off, had a great performance. And then he cuts a 30-second promo for his sponsor, was a Skinny Bets, cuts a 30-second radio ad in the cage for Skinny Bets, and then gets a social media following. He's probably going to get another 50,000 followers in the next couple of days. A-plus post-fight interview, Mike Davis. I have an unbelievable matchup for him on to the next one. It's the one. If you know what I'm talking about, on to the next one, fans. We've got the one. We've got the one we've been fighting for and looking for quite some time. But that was my biggest takeaway. Jed, what's your biggest takeaway from this card?
I mean, and let me find another one, because my actual answer to this is Mackenzie Dern. Like, it's, and that feels disrespectful to Yan Xiaonan, right? Because she won the fight, even if I didn't score it for her technically. Like, she looked good and did the thing she wanted to do really well. And showed even a little more power than I thought I'd given her credit for. But my big takeaway is going to be the Dern thing. So if I'm not doing Dern because I don't want to do it, it's Brendan Allen. That's Brendan Allen. Yeah, that's maybe it wouldn't be, but you guys have already taken other good choices. So Brendan Allen's performance against Jocko, it's what I thought he was going to do and what I thought he was capable of doing. But we're seeing the talent coalesce here. Brendan Allen has always been very talented, and he's got some good wins over like legitimately still good guys. But every time he has stepped up to a top 15-ish level opponent, he's been set back. Like he hasn't been able to get over that hump, but he's got a ton of experience and he's still young. He's still in his mid-20s. So his performance, maybe we didn't see anything particularly new. A lot of what we saw is stuff that I knew he could do and was good at, but him doing it against an opponent who I think the UFC does have ranked. I'm not 100% certain on that, but I know he's a Favre for us. He is a fighter also receiving votes as far as Jocko goes. And I think Brendan Allen we're going to see more from him coming up, right? Like he is really talented and he's just going to be hitting the prime of his athletic peaks and his career really. And I'm excited to see what he can do at middleweight.
We have bonuses. And I was wrong. I was wrong about the biggest takeaway, and I will bring that up in a second. Okay.
I have something to add on that as well.
Yeah, I think we're going to probably go to the same place. So I'll turn it up to you. Fight of the night clearly was Daniel Santos versus John Castaneda. What a crazy comeback win from Daniel the Robot Santos. Four performance bonuses. Maybe the Zuck man kicked in a couple of bucks. Guido Canetti, Chelsea Chandler, the now 16th ranked middleweight Brendan Allen, because the stakes were very high in that fight, is for number 16, and Joaquin Silva. First win
The first four fights of the card got bonuses.
All the pre-Zuck fights.
Sean, what was the other big takeaway? Because there's one that I saw a comment. I'm like, oh, how the hell did I forget this? Go ahead.
Yeah, I think I saw the same comment as you, my man over here, JGE. Yeah, you brought it up. Ilir Latifi.
I totally forgot about this.
That he fought with a staph infection. What?
I think that happens a lot, but they usually just don't tell people. They don't say it on the mic.
There's a reason, like you can't go to the gym with a staph infection. Those things are incredibly contagious, though, especially on mats, on canvas. Like, what? What? Like, I don't have, like, what? How is this a thing that we're doing? Who's fighting? How are we allowing people to fight with staph infections in the UFC in 2022? Are you kidding me?
I would be nonchalant about it. I just got a staph infection a couple days ago. And then he gave like, we thought he was going to retire. And then he was like, nah, he's not going to retire. And then we thought he was going to retire. And then he didn't. Then he took it back. And I'm like, all right, just retire. Like, are you going to retire or not retire? But it was the weirdest post-fight interview of the night, no doubt. Jed?
I don't understand. Because like, lots of people fought after him on the same canvas. Also, he's just probably been in the Apex and all the training rooms and whatever hotel in Vegas and et cetera. Like, other people have been using the same mats as him all week long. Like, what? How is someone, please, someone who's a more trained on medical expertise, please explain to me how this is possible without everybody on this card getting sick.
Someone said Doc probably cleared it, but like, how can you clear staph infection that you found 2 days ago? I don't know.
It's not optimal.
If I'm
Yan Xiaonan and I end up with staph on my face from when Mackenzie Dern was literally rubbing my face in the mat, like I would be so, so angry because it just shouldn't have happened. Like it seems dumb.
And that fight was right before the prelim main event or the last fight for the prelim. And they went right into that thing because it was 25 minutes before the top of the hour. I don't think anybody was in there zamboning the octagon floor. It was just like, all right, well, we'll just spray it down, give it a little wipey wipe, and come on, John and Daniel, let's get out there and do the damn thing. And both guys are on the mat. Both guys are dropped. Yeah, there you go. So
just a real, real banner night. Just a real banner night.
I mean, this was as AK
we cover said, a real sport. We cover a real sport, y'all.
Yeah, as it's AK says so eloquently, it was a card. It was a card. All right. If you guys got questions, we're going to take like 3 or 4 and then we're going to get out of here because Bellator is going on right now. We want to make sure that BKFC is going on right now.
We are about to get to Big Ben Rothwell. He is next in line.
How many fights?
This is what Big Ben should have been doing his whole life too. He was made for this.
Oh,
I'm very excited.
He was like he was like 295, right? On the weigh-in.
It should be illegal to allow that man to fight bare knuckle other humans. Like
it's gonna be dope. I'm excited about it.
We'll take a couple. Speaking of Brendan Allen, what did we think of Brendan Allen calling out Andre Muniz for UFC 283? So the now number 16th ranked middleweight on the planet says, let's go to Rio and let's take on a dude that nobody's calling out. Jed, what did you think of Brendan Allen calling out Andre Muniz for Brazil in January?
I love the ambition. Because nobody is calling him out. Nobody's calling him out to go to Brazil and fight him. And strictly because it's so ambitious, he has a chance at it. Because otherwise, I don't think he does. Because Muniz is going to be trying to fight forward. Allen, I don't think, is ranked in the UFC. I don't know if he'll get one with this win. So I love the ambition. I'm not sure that it's an awful style call out for him. Like, Allen will lose that fight if it happens. But respect the man for taking his shot, you know? I got no issues with it.
John?
Yeah, no, I mean, major respect. No one's out here calling Andre Muniz out. I think that's the first one I've ever heard, at least in his UFC run, right? Like, I don't know about you guys, but I feel like we've talked about this before.
Dogs on top, baby! Top!
I don't know what else. Screenshot that face that you just made. That was great.
That's the best, please.
I don't even remember.
You guys should have seen me during the national championship game. My friends have videos. It was tough. It's tough hang.
Hey man, we've all been there. We've all been there. What was I even saying? Oh, like during this UFC run, like no one's calling out Andre Muniz. I feel like we've all talked about this, but like he's gonna fight for a title probably later rather than sooner because I don't know that the UFC is gonna give him a quick route there. But like once he gets there, he might be champion. So yeah, good on you, Brendan Allen, trying to call that guy out. You're not gonna get it. And you know, you probably shouldn't get it. Like Jed said, that's a terrible stylistic matchup for him, but you gotta love the balls on it.
Absolutely. Thoughts on Hione Barcelos' performance against Trevin Jones, Sean, coming back from the Victor Henry loss earlier this year. Looked pretty damn good. He dominated the fight.
Yeah, I mean, anytime you're getting a 30-25, right? It's not a bad night in the office.
Good night. See if we get any more here. A lot of judging talk, but I think we've covered the judging pretty extensively on this thing. we'll pull up this one. We'll call it like under the radar. Chelsea Chandler just beat the hell out of Julia Stolyarenko tonight. That was impressive. Julia had good position early on, got the takedown. She tried to secure maybe an armbar.
Then she did the dumb thing, Mike. Like I was talking about with Mackenzie Dern.
Yep.
When someone gifts you a mount, just stay there. Like you don't. Going from mount to armbar is. I have always thought this like the worst thing you could do. I'm taking away this dominant, the most dominant position for a finishing opportunity. Like I'll just sit right here. I'll punch you in the face. I'll just do this all day. And like, she might have won the fight had she not gone for that armbar. And then, because as soon as she did, it was like, oh, we're done here. She can't do anything else. It's very bad.
You know who did get an amount and did the punching thing? Chelsea Chandler did that. And that's why she got the
finish. Super effective. I don't know if you guys have ever heard the phrase of just punch people in the face. It's really good at winning fights. Jiu-jitsu is wonderful, and I love jiu-jitsu. It's awesome. You can also just use it to hold position and beat the hell out of somebody.
Yeah, that was an impressive performance. Daniel Santos really impressed me, low-key, because that dude is a freaking zombie. He took a big shot. John Castaneda was flowing out there, hitting him with everything. Dropped Santos. I was like, this fight's donezo. And then Santos just gets up like nothing happened. It was like Castaneda knocked him out and then brought him back to life like six different times. And then by the time he just sat on the stool, it was like the stool just gave him like extra superpowers because Castaneda kept lighting him up in the second round. And Santos like didn't even budge. He just kept going forward and then landed just a disgusting knee. And the one thing that actually made the one moment that made the non-crowd sort of stand out was that knee that Santos landed, because it was a different sound than anything we heard throughout the night, John.
Yeah, absolutely. That was a wild fight, hell of a comeback, but also I can really appreciate the shoot box commitment and loyalty and dedication to all sort of looking like Charles Oliveira with the bleached hair and stuff like that.
And the getting your ass kicked until you suddenly everything, kick somebody's right? ass.
Just replicating this man's style. I am here for that. Like, props to you guys. That's loyalty.
Dude, it was awesome.
I
bet Santos live after the first round. So I was like, I think Castaneda is breaking. I know he almost killed him twice, but he didn't. And it really looks like he is tired and doesn't want to be there anymore. And Santos just stayed on him. That man, tougher than a $2 steak, baby.
Yeah, you could see the frustration in his eyes at the end of the first round. He actually looked up at the clock with about 15 seconds left in the first round. And that was a great live bet, Jed. Very smart on your part. Very smart.
I missed a few of them. I'm not telling you about the live bets I made that didn't work.
I didn't know about those. But
took a couple of those.
But that was a good one. You should host a gambling podcast on MMAfighting.com. That'd be great.
I'll look into it.
Okay, cool. All right, I think we're done. I think we have given this card
just in time for Big Ben, baby.
25 minutes more than we probably should have. But Bellator going on right now. So in a matter of moments, we are going to, once I get this all situated and up on the website, we're going to go on to the MMA Fighting Twitter spaces, and we're going to watch whatever's left of the Bellator main card together. And we'll have some fun. We'll bring some people in, and we'll do the darn thing. So for Sean, for Jed, I am Mike Heck. Thank you for joining us. Hope you enjoyed the card and enjoy the Bellator card as well. We'll see you guys later.
Love you guys. Go Dawgs.
Love you guys.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Hi, we're Visible. We're the wireless company with nothing to hide. Seriously. Hidden fees? We don't have them. Annual contracts? Not our thing. Great wireless on just one line? Now that's more like it. Get unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month. Taxes and fees included. That's right, $25 a month, every month. Sorry, hidden fees. We're just not that into you. Sometimes the choice is just Visible. Switch today at Visible.com. Rate with service on the Visible plan. For additional terms and network management practices, see Visible.com.